Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
From Postcard from the Past and the multi-award-winning Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is a place where we decipher biro on printed cardboard, make semi-private messages fully public, and emerge sometimes a little the wiser as we investigate old picture postcards, their messages and their images, as they take us from Arbroath to Zenner, and we explore what it is that causes us to keep hold of these little cardboard rectangles. Each time now I meet a guest, and it's their postcards that act as small clues to direct us towards memories, mysteries, and stories. I'm Tom Jackson. I'm delighted to say that today my guest on the podcast is Professor Julia Gillan. Julia, welcome to Podcast from the Past.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here, Tom.
Now, Julia Gillan is a Professor of Literacy Studies in the Department of Linguistics and English Language at Lancaster University. She has worked with and written a lot about postcards. In fact, she's the author of a new academic work, which is called The Edwardian Picture Postcard as a Communications Revolution, which is a fine book and actually sums up some of her work in this area. And it kind of developed, I understand, we'll talk about this a bit later, from her work as principal investigator, which sounds a bit sort of Columbo, for the Edwardian Postcard Project, which was an attempt to bring together thousands of messages from Edwardian postcards and to try to draw some kind of message of their own from those messages to try to understand something of the practice of picture postcard writing in the Edwardian era. Now, we're going to be discussing that a bit later on. But first, Julia, you join us today bearing a very clear BN postmark. What's that?
Brighton.
Ah,
yes.
So why? What's your association with Brighton?
I was born in Brighton, and although I left when I was four, we used to go back a lot because we had three grandparents still living there. Then there was obviously a phase after they died when I didn't go so much. But in recent years, I've been going again, and I absolutely love it. I think it's a wonderful place, and it is one of the best English seaside resorts. And, of course, seaside resorts
It's not your nearest from Lancaster.
No, it isn't. No, but English seaside resorts are associated with postcards, so they're obviously more in the modern era than in the era that I'm most interested in,
yes,
which is 1901 to 1910.
Yes, I suppose in the post-war era, the picture postcard and the seaside are inextricably linked. But there were still plenty of seaside postcards in the Edwardian era.
Oh, there really were, yes, absolutely. There was a whole phase, actually. There was a phase when the most fashionable cards were those of actresses.
Of course, yes.
And
yes,
everyone
yes.
was collecting actress cards. And then the next craze that came along and superseded that was called rough seas.
Ah, yes.
And it started by being waves, obviously at seaside resorts and other places, but actually the publishers were often touching up the pictures to make the waves look even more spectacular than they had been.
It's almost inexplicable as an interest, because all the waves look the same, really. The pictures are clearly fake because
yes,
you wouldn't know the wave was coming, except I suppose you could have a very high tide and rough weather, but to yeah. catch the wave. I've seen them with messages saying the record wave.
Yes, yes,
I thought,
yes.
Well, how have you measured this
yes,
exactly?
Yes, yes.
Very peculiar.
Yeah.
Did Brighton have rough wave pictures? They must have done. Rough seas.
I think they must have done. I think everywhere did, yes. Yeah. Yes, and some of them aren't necessarily associated with particular places. As you said, they're just record waves or big waves or things. But I just find it so funny to think that the practice of collecting celebrity actresses was superseded by the rough waves. I just find that quite extraordinary.
Yes. Well, I suppose if we understood popular taste, we'd all be millionaires. But it is very odd. You go from a beautiful woman to a rough sea. Impenetrable, really, but there you go. So, Julia, when did you last send a postcard?
Oh, probably about 6 months ago, actually. I was in Bisbee, Arizona, which is a marvellous copper mining town with an extraordinary post office that dates from 1920. So I thought I can't resist sending a few postcards from here.
Lovely, lovely. And where did you send them?
Just my brother and my mother, yes.
Perfect. Yeah. Mothers are ultimately designed to have postcards sent to them, I think.
Indeed.
It does work.
Yes.
Right, before we see and hear about the cards that Judith brought along, give you a quick card of mine. And this is, of course, a postcard from the past card, like I do on Twitter and in my book. There's an old card from which I've selected just a part of the message. And this is a multi-view. There's five pictures on the card, and they're divided by yellow, rather broad, garish yellow stripes. It's Somerset. The central image is Cheddar Gorge. And if everything else seems to take its colour palette from Cheddar Gorge,
yes.
It's all sort of that sort of creamy stone colour. Wells Cathedral, Burrington Coombe, Montacute in the Oval, and Glastonbury Abbey. And actually, funny enough, you're talking about days at the seaside. This seems to me a sort of perfect day at the seaside, summed up in a card. It's from 1986. I consider that quite modern. It's sent to Clare Gingell in Chesham in Buckinghamshire. It's from someone called Kelly. And rather sweetly, she puts her surname in brackets, like children do, from Kelly, brackets, Bateman. So Kelly Bateman. And she says, "Dear Claire, I'm having a fantastic time. I've been to a swanery and have seen the Red Arrows." This is good stuff. "I went to the beach and made a spaceship out of sand and played in it all day." Dream holiday.
Yes.
She said, "We had one really bad day so far. I haven't spotted any earwigs yet."
That is lovely.
I can only imagine that that's a sort of extension of a conversation that happened beforehand.
Yes. Yeah.
Otherwise, that's one hell of a sort of strange non sequitur.
I love the reminder of how the space age kind of permeated the era.
Yes,
really
yes.
Nice.
And, she's obviously not 5 years old. She's 8 or 9 years old, and she's... She played in that spaceship all day.
Yes, fantastic.
Wonderful, simple pleasures.
Yes.
I mean, she does go on to complain that the tent is lovely and cosy, but a bit squashed.
Yes, they usually are.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, well done, Kelly. I'll give you another quick one. This is Cromer. So, we're in Cromer in...
Norfolk.
Norfolk in 1999, I think. So, again, not quite modern. And this is from someone called... This is from Nan, in fact. Oh, and this one is, in a way, the opposite, because actually it's quite concerning. If it wasn't 24 years ago, I'd be concerned about this. So it's sent to someone, Emily, in Ware, in Hertfordshire, and it says, "Dear Emily, brackets Mum and Dad, I hope you've had a wonderful holiday. I haven't heard from Mummy yet, so I don't know the situation." And this is from Nan, so I think Mummy might... actually be her daughter.
Mm.
And she says, "Had lovely weather when I stayed at Walton." And then she says, nearly paddled.
Mm.
That's not much fault, nearly paddled, but anyway. Mm. "If you can, will you phone me? I'm so worried about Wales. I don't know where your mum is. Lots of love, Nan. Kiss, kiss, kiss." So a strange sort of mixture, mélange of sort of happy seaside-y thoughts and the kind of frustration of not being able to get in touch and genuine concern.
Yes, it's also interesting to send a postcard to ask somebody to phone you.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Well, there is that. Quite often you get this sort of meta communication, don't you? The most common one would be, "I will write soon."
Yes, yes.
Which when you first see it, you think, well, you are writing.
Yes.
But of course they mean write properly.
Yes.
But yes, I suppose because we now consider the post to be so slow and ineffective, that to suggest that the card would get there in order to talk about another method of communication seems topsy-turvy, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, indeed, yes.
I'm more likely to ring someone up and say, by the way, I've sent you a card.
Yes.
Because that would be the bit that goes first.
Yes.
But, yeah, well, I hope it all worked out.
I hope so.
Because she was really worried.
Yes, I hope Mum turned up.
Yeah. Though I don't quite know...
Yes, one person's daughter and one person's mother.
Someone basically wasn't keeping in touch and they should have been.
Yes, yes.
But there you go. Well, I should remind everyone listening at home, images of these cards... And all the cards we discussed today are going to be on the show notes, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see that everything is real and you can have a look for yourselves. Now, Julia, you've been kind enough to bring along with you for this recording some postcards from your collection. What's the first card you've got? And just tell me, which collection is this from, effectively?
Yes, sure. So I have a what I call a main collection of 3,000 cards that a colleague in the project earlier with me, Nigel Hall, and myself bought over many years, Edwardian postcards that have been through the post. And the whole collection of 3,000 cards has now been donated to Lancaster University Library.
Right.
So they've digitised them, and they're all freely available online in Lancaster Digital Collections, along with the transcriptions.
Perfect. So no one has to go through any old shoeboxes anymore. They
That's
are all
right.
online.
That's right. So it's just really kind of happy that there's a good... 3,000 is a fair size. It certainly took us a while to compile it, and I'm glad that it's available open access so anybody can see it.
And anyone who's spent any time looking at Edwardian cards will realise that transcribing them is full of traps.
It took years.
Yes.
It took many,
surprisingly
many
difficult.
Years. Yes, yes.
And that's a combination of handwriting and abbreviations and
that's
smudges.
Right.
And
yes, yes.
And you that was your task?
I did a lot. Nigel did a lot. We had relatives. At times I received funding to employ briefly PhD students as research assistants.
With good eyes.
Or other students, yes. And what we found actually, Tom, I mean, you're quite right. I find that it takes, if you've got several eyes on it, it works much better.
Yes.
Or even if I look back at it, you know, some weeks later after I've first struggled with it, that works better.
Yes. And but, I find if you can't get a word, skip it.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Type
yes,
out the rest.
Yes,
and then
absolutely.
You
come
may
back
get
to
it on
later.
The because ultimately it's about meaning, not about
yes,
orthography.
Indeed. That's right. Yes. Yes. You're quite right.
But also, it is difficult because, as I mean, this is something that you are literally the expert on. But the register which people write in, the way they express things, is very different from what we do now. Although we consider ourselves very informal, often Edwardian postcards are more informal yet. They're very,
yes.
very chatty or
yes.
almost, yes, it's just completely, yes, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, very informal.
Yes. Well, I found a whole kind of a range, really. I think the Edwardians absolutely leapt to use postcards, partly because they were released from the etiquette of letter writing. So that's one reason why they absolutely... why I call it a communications revolution, because it was for the first time combining colour images or monochrome images or colour with short messages, and that it could arrive so quickly, you know, often within hours. So it was an extraordinary change.
That's the bit that we still don't connect with.
Yes, exactly. But it also just released people from the tyranny of writing letters.
Yes.
However, many of them do actually borrow from letter writer conventions and say dear so-and-so and
yes.
kind of end up with a salutation and say things like I hope you're well. But some of them don't. Some of them you can almost feel you can hear the voice of the person talking. You get, for example, a whole string of sort of questions.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
You know, did you see Aunt Maisie last week? Wasn't her hat amazing? Did you think of, you know, and so forth.
Just and often if, a lack yes. of punctuation.
Yes,
which
yes.
it makes it harder to transcribe, but it also suggests that sort of rush of communication.
Exactly.
There's something quite exuberant about it
yes.
often.
Yes, yes.
Particularly
yes,
young women, I find.
Yes,
And postcards were sometimes seen as a sort of female...
They were.
Fashion, to understand.
Yes. Most of the cards in the collection are written by women, but there are a high proportion written by men. And actually, the two that I brought along today were both written by men.
Okay.
But I think it's important to note that women must have been important because women were the ones that kept them.
Yes.
So the practices of keeping albums was mainly a female thing. And so that's another reason, another kind of gender influence on them.
And again, different from our time, because all the gentlemen of a certain age at the postcard fairs that I attend are gentlemen.
Yes,
It is predominantly a male preserve. So, again, that's changed. Everything changes.
Yes.
So let's have a look at this first one. This is pretty much impenetrable. So you've done the work on this. What is it? What are we looking at?
Yeah, it is at first sight. So it's a style called cross-hatching, which the Victorians brought in. And some of the Edwardians who were very confident at it could just writing it appears quite easy, but they were so used to it that they could just read it straight off.
So the card is of mumbles.
Yes, exactly.
Is that Cardiff?
Yes. Yes, near there. I'm sorry, my I have looked it up, but my geography is a bit vague on that, I'm afraid. Isn't it? Wouldn't it be nearer Swansea?
Maybe.
Yes.
Apologies to those in Mumbles.
Yes, of great apologies to those in Mumbles, because actually people in Mumbles have been helpful in helping me learn some things about the card.
Okay.
Anyway, shall I tell you what it says?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. So it's written to Mrs. George Hardley at Meadowfields, Lytham Road, Ashton, Preston. And as I say, as you know, anyone looking at the card can see it's cross-hatched, but actually contains a terrific amount of information.
Well, I guess you double the wording in a space.
Clever. So the writer starts off by explaining where they're writing from. So it's Puffin, North Dock, Swansea, 13-12-09, obviously 1909. My dear wife, Lawrence and I were walking up the main street this evening at 4:45 when we came face to face with George. It was a great surprise to all of us. We returned at once to the Puffin, so we are now going to have tea. I shall persuade him to stay here tonight. It seems like old times, him being here again tonight. True love to you and all at home. Always yours, George.
Oh. So George met George?
No. Yes. George met George, who's a master mariner,
right,
is walking along with Lawrence, who's his 15-year-old second son. Who's working with him, and they've actually met the eldest son, George, obviously unexpectedly. George is also a mariner, but nevertheless, you know, they didn't realise they were going to be at the same spot in the North Dock in Swansea on that day.
Amazing.
And what's lovely about it is that the older George has immediately wanted to let his wife know.
Yes.
He's
worthy of comment.
Yes. So they had 10 children between them.
Goodness me.
And you know, 8 of whom survived to adulthood. And yet it's just lovely, both the affection that the older George shows for son George, but also for the wife and all at home.
And this is typical of the part of the work you've done with these cards, isn't it? That you've attempted to use census material and other material to flesh out these people into, give them real biographies.
That's right. So I look initially at the 1901 census and the 1911 census, and I found about half of the addressees actually in the collection.
That's amazing, really.
Yes, it is good. Sometimes it takes a long time, or it takes time to sort of trace them. Sometimes the address is more helpful than the name, or you know. Particularly with one of the sites that I use. And then I go back in the census as well, and sometimes forwards, to find out, you know, where these people came from, what their ancestry was, what their occupations are. And the 1911 census is very useful in giving us information about the homes.
Right.
So you can get some idea of the accommodation they're living in. All the censuses say something about occupations, and you can trace people through marriages and registers as well. So, yes, that's what I really enjoy.
I find it fascinating because when I look at old cards, I often feel this kind of resonance in them because there is this sense that there's lots of different meanings flying around as to, obviously, there's the picture, there's the message, there's who they're from and who they're to and how they were stamped and what the message actually says and so on. So there's lots going on, kind of vibrating with meaning, but you kind of take that to the next stage by adding in this extra information that you can find. And then they're like little short stories then. They have a narrative to them.
Yes, yeah, I think so, yes.
Certainly the principal characters are fleshed out.
Yes, there are. Indeed.
It's very good. But I've known about your project for a long time and we've spoken before.
Yes.
I find it slightly frightening because I think the figure is there's about 1 billion Edwardian cards were sent. So it's out there somewhere, or about 1 billion. And it feels like a kind of something out of Borges or something, that you would try to make sense and understand the meanings and the characters of a billion cards. More lifetimes than any of us will ever have.
Well, I don't know how many are available, but obviously I kind of had that... You know, initially I thought I'd go to 1,000. Then I went to 1,000 and then thought more was better. So I stopped at 3,000. It's right. Not to say, of course, I've carried on collecting since, but right. I kind of thought that was a point at which to say this is a collection,
yes.
And kind of work on it, write about it, deposit it so that people could see it and continue their own research if they want.
And that 3,000 was enough to be able to draw inferences and find patterns. And
I think so. Yes, I think so. I mean, one point is just what you said earlier about people saying, I will write soon.
Yeah.
And that appears so much. Or people say, thank you for your letter, or I'm going to write you a letter, or they just imply it's the letter. So one thing I've worked out is that these were generally written interspersed with letters.
Yes.
They're part of the
story in that sense.
Yes.
And it's strange. It was not strange, I suppose, but it's worth remarking that there is not a huge archive of letters out there in the same way, because they were destroyed, thrown away.
Mm.
Whereas postcards is almost their unique quality, really, is the fact that they are such effective objects that people want to hold on to them.
Yeah.
Even if they're not collecting them consciously, they're just quite hard to part with.
Yes. I mean, I think that, you know, both of us go to postcard fairs and we're usually buying them out of shoeboxes or looking through shoeboxes for them. But those single cards in shoeboxes have generally come from what were originally albums.
Yes.
So one might imagine that in this case, perhaps it was Mrs. Hardley's album and it's kept for a long time and then, you know, eventually dispersed in a house sale or something. And they come to us as usually as single items.
Yes, and they've nearly all come from house sales, really, haven't they?
Yes, I guess so.
But then it's hardly surprising. It's more than 100 years ago. So,
yes, indeed. You
know, mortality will catch up with the original people.
Mm.
Very interesting. A quick card from me now. This is, you know, as so often, from the sublime to the ridiculous. We're Bude in Cornwall. It's another seaside view, then, if you like. This is a multi-view with, I can't even count them, too many images.
Oh, yes.
Lots of blue, lots of little fishing boats.
Yes.
Actually, it's another youngster writing this one. This is 1998. Oh, my goodness, it's too modern. And it's going to Miss Seaman of Cheshunt in Hertfordshire. And I don't know how old she is. 10, something like that. I do like cards from... it tends to be young girls, because young boys don't write cards.
No.
But young girls are often very playful and want to impress their chums or tease them or carry on jokes.
Yes.
And in fact, that's not entirely modern. That was also visible in Edwardian cards. She says, Dear Laura, having a nice time, are you? Slightly aggressive way to put it, but anyway. We went to the beach today, then we went swimming. Please note, chlorine and salt do not mix. I don't quite get that.
Well, I suppose if they said they went to the beach and then they went swimming, so they went swimming somewhere else
pool,
other than the sea.
And
so
it made the skin tingle, perhaps?
Yes, it must have done.
Okay, well, she'd do well in science, this girl. I have seen this really nice boy that I think he wants to go out with me. Well, maybe he's a bit older. I'll find out and tell you.
Oh.
So this is all the news.
Yes.
Lots of love, Rebecca. And then, always my favourite thing, a PS.
Yes.
My friend won't shut up about the boy.
Yes. Well,
actually, Rebecca, you didn't shut up about it. So,
no. Great excitement about the boy.
Yeah.
Yes.
So she's sort of trying to scandalise her friend and she's scandalising herself. And it's just a sort of sense of, I don't know, just fun about the and putting these things on paper.
Yes.
And in fact, of course, the postman can see it as well.
Yes.
Mum and Dad might have seen it as they posted it. It's it's a very modern card. But there are plenty of Edwardian cards talking about people interested in young men and young women.
Indeed, most certainly, yes.
And actually often extraordinarily, almost overpowering expressions of affection from men to women particularly, to which I read them and I sort of think, just give the girls some space, because sometimes they are, you know, your ever-loving, totally affectionate, forever, heaps and heaps of love and kisses. yeah, I suppose that's how it was expressed.
Yes. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Podcasts from the Past, the Postcard Podcast, and my guest today is Professor of Literacy Studies, Julia Gillan. Now, here's a surprise. We've received a postcard. And it's a postcard of HMS Victory, Classic View. It's one of the great postcard views from 1974, a salmon card. And this is from Mrs. Bowley, who says, could you please mention my gran on your senior citizen spot? She will be 94 on July the 7th. Her name is Mrs. M. Richards. I'm sorry, Mrs. Bowley, we don't do birthday requests.
Oh.
Right then, Julia, let's get on with your Edwardian cards. What's the second one you've got for us?
So the second card is one from a whole collection of cards I've got, written to Ruby Ingrey, most of them from Arthur Wadilow. And
okay.
I've got 14 cards from Arthur to Ruby, and a few other cards relating to Ruby as well. So one that she sent jointly with Arthur when they were visiting his parents in Cambridgeshire. I've got a card from Ruby's sister and other members of the family. So I've got, so in that case,
wow.
I have been able to find out a lot about them and actually find out a lot about what happened to them from the period of 1908 to 1909 that we've got lots of evidence from in the cards, but then subsequently from these other cards, plus things I've been able to find in the census and other historical records.
And in this case, because you've got multiple cards, you sort of have a narrative, as
yes,
it were.
Yes, exactly.
With date stamps,
yes.
Luckily.
Yes.
The joy of postmarks.
Exactly. So I could put them all in order. Yes, which was good.
So the card is an arty card, isn't it?
It's a sort of arty, sort of sentimental card, yes. Arthur seems to have gone through phases of choosing different themes. So he started off with quite cheap cards from Chatham area, because
right. Okay.
He was in the Royal Navy as a stoker.
Right.
So he's gone for kind of the cheapest cards. He's then moved towards these sort of sentimental cards, sentimental
sort of
colour image of nothing in particular.
Countryside, pastoral image, isn't it?
Yes.
And it comes in a... It has a sort of fake gilt frame on the card.
Exactly, yes.
Which
looks
quite good, really.
Yes. The other thing that's quite funny about it is that it doesn't give, as far as I can see, a publisher, but it says, you can just see it, but the publisher has nevertheless printed on it, printed in Saxony.
Oh, yes.
Now, whether that's true or not, I can't be quite sure, because an actual publisher who did print cards in Saxony, who was kind of reputable, would be more likely to put their name on it. So it might.
Oh,
so who knows,
mean.
Actually, which company produced it.
Because obviously, listeners probably know that a lot of early British cards were printed in Germany.
Yes.
But do you think it became almost a badge of honour to say that, even though
yes. It
was might actually been printed in Norfolk.
Yes, because in general, the Germans got the colour printing right
yes. Earlier.
Yes, so they were able to do more techniques and so forth.
Of course, come the First World War, none of that happened at all.
That's correct. So beginning of the First World War, we have the end of the picture postcard craze, yes. The Great Edwardian picture postcard craze. For that reason, because of the rising cost of paper, the cost of stamps, so it then cost a penny to send a postcard, and so that really was the end of the postcard revolution.
History was conspiring against them a bit.
It was, by the time of the First World War.
So what does Arthur have to say for himself?
Right, so at this point, this is one of the last cards that I have. Not the last, but one of the last cards I have from Arthur to Ruby. And he's always making plans to see her. So he's always telling her that he's going to catch the train, he's going to come up, he's going to be on his bike, and
yes.
And they're going to go out for a bike ride together.
Because making plans is a big part of what postcards became used for.
Indeed, indeed. And indeed, we know that actually they went off on holiday together on the train and with their bikes to visit his parents.
Lovely.
So you would infer from this that, you know, they had quite a relationship. And this card actually says, "Dear R, I'm sorry to have to tell you I shall not be home to go for a ride with you on Saturday, as I was late getting on board on Wednesday morning, ran into a fog just this side of somewhere. So I have got to remain on board for 3 days, but expect to be home on Sunday morning. Will come round home to see you as soon as I can. Have no time to write a letter from Arthur." So he's been grounded from his late return to the boat.
Right, they're quite unforgiving.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. He was quite, you know, so most of the cards, as I say, are essentially saying, you know, "I'm going to come tomorrow on my bike and we'll go out for a ride together," or something like that. But occasionally the Royal Navy interferes with his plans by either grounding him in this case or taking him off to Scotland for several weeks.
It's amazing. There is something about, I mean, I don't know that it's so different from what any collector does, but by digging into this effectively random collection, did you cut out boring ones? Did you
say, no.
So that's part of it.
Yes.
So you did good. I mean, obviously that's important because yes. Boring is part of it.
Yes.
But nonetheless, there's a sense that it's a lucky dip.
Yes.
You put in your thumb and you pulled out a plum.
Yes.
And then, kind of regardless of where that plum would take you, you went there.
Yes.
So you would find out that story.
That's right. Yes. Yes. I tried with each and every one. Yes.
And I suppose that isn't that quite unusual in a sort of academic context to have so much chance involved, that you're what you're dealing with is. I mean, I'm not criticising. I think it's exactly the right way to do it.
Mm.
But it feels like there's a lot of. It's kind of exciting. There's something random about it.
Yeah.
But that seems quite a strange thing to be doing in a way.
Well, yes, it is a strange thing for an academic to be doing. So I basically did it on Sundays and evenings. Yes.
But you have to start somewhere with anything.
You
you've got to find your material.
Yes,
so
you do. Yes,
there is
yes,
no,
yes.
You can't know till you've looked at it what's on it.
That's right.
So I suppose that's it,
right.
Really, isn't it?
And it was the excitement of realising that I had several cards written to Ruby Ingrie that made us think, you know, because I was working with Nigel Hall at the time, made us think this is actually really worth looking into.
Oh, really? So this is one of the cards that effectively was a springboard for the rest of the collection?
I wouldn't say that. I would just say that as we bought them and gradually transcribed them and gradually got them organised, it took a while before we realised that we'd got several cards written to Ruby from Arthur. And then it took even longer again to work out that I'd also got a card from Arthur's sister to,
right.
You know, and so forth, a few other members of the family. So it took quite a while to uncover the story here.
It's very strange how these cards, obviously, a lot of them would have been, as you say, in an album.
So yes.
They'd found their way. They'd flown into this coupe
yes. From
wherever, from different places around Britain or wherever.
That's right.
And then with a house sale, with the passing of time, they kind of get dispersed.
Yes.
And some stay just close enough together that you might buy them at the same time.
Exactly. Exactly, without even realising as we bought them.
Yeah, because you don't have time to go through the card. You're in the process
right.
of buying.
That's right, yes.
But also I've found, not infrequently, buying Edwardian cards, from the cheapest possible options there are, that I will buy some cards that have a particular theme or a particular, they're from a particular place, a particular collection, or a particular correspondent, and then a month later I'll buy a card and get one that is from the same correspondence. No, they're from the same dealer.
Yes.
So it's not crazy. It's not like a bolt from heaven.
Yes.
But they've come up on a different at a different day in a different box.
Yes.
But
yes.
They haven't quite got away from me.
Exactly. Yes.
And that's strange. Yes. That sort of the image I've used is it's like these you know, the murmurations of starlings.
Yes.
That these things sort of float away in different shapes, but they come back to roost. And if you're lucky, you can find them.
Yes. Yes.
Ruby and Arthur are a key part of your research. What else do we know about them?
Well, Ruby is actually very interesting because she comes from a very poor family. She's moving around Islington for the whole period between 1901 to 1911. Her father works in the cattle market.
Oh.
And they seem to be struggling with rent, you know, frequently moving. Yet...
Is that the cattle market where the agricultural halls?
The Metropolitan cattle market.
Ah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So it can't have been an easy beginning, but nonetheless, all six, you know, her and her elder siblings, she was the youngest, all thrived. Ruby herself evidently learnt to read and write very well and became a typist.
Oh.
She went to a typist school, so Arthur sometimes refers to picking her up from there. And by 1911, she was earning quite a good living as a typist.
And this was not a everyday skill.
No. No, but there were some women being able to do it. But there was one, I mean, of course, I cannot know if it was an obstacle, but she would not have been allowed to keep her job if she got married.
Right, right.
So it would have been difficult to marry anybody who wasn't earning enough to support a wife.
Yes, yes.
So, of course, I don't know, can't tell what happened exactly between Ruby and Arthur. Arthur actually left the Navy in 1912 and became a postman. He then became a soldier in the war. He didn't go back into the Navy. Fortunately, survived the First World War.
Good.
But while he was away, Ruby's father died and she moved in with her sister.
Right.
And she married her her brother-in-law's brother, in effect, who a man called Percy, who was clearly relatively well off. I mean, not very well off, but, you know, definitely able to support a wife the child that they eventually went on to have. So we don't obviously know then what exactly happens in the relationship between Ruby and Arthur, but we do know that she must have had an album,
yes,
a substantial postcard album,
yes,
and that a substantial proportion of the cards in it must have been from Arthur or relating to her time with Arthur.
And she didn't burn them.
Exactly.
You know, they were held on to.
Yes.
Postcards are good at not... you know, they're quite resilient. If you want to get rid of them, you can.
Most definitely.
So there is often
Most
a
definitely.
Sense that the cards that are kept have survived the sort of various turmoils of life.
Yes.
Emotional and otherwise.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, very good. Well, it has an ending. Well, it doesn't have an ending, really. It has a sort of ending.
Well, I've traced them all through there. I've traced both Ruby and Arthur through there. In Arthur's case, two marriages and, you know, and much of his later life he lived in Norfolk, but he lived part of the time in Middlesex, which is where Ruby settled down with her husband and child.
Right. Goodness me. And there are 3,000-ish such stories. Within the archive, really?
I've only been able to trace about half of the addressees in the census. But yes, there are lots of small stories and some that, you know, that can be fleshed out more, like the story of Ruby and Arthur and the story of...
Every one of them sounds like a Radio 4 drama.
I think they could be. Sometimes I think, you know, could I turn some of them into small dramas? But anyway, I can dream of maybe trying that sometime in the future.
Well, people talk about... sometimes people see the cards and they say to me, oh, it's like the beginning of a short story.
Yes.
And I say, well, it is a short story. That's the story.
Yes.
You don't need to take it any further.
No.
That's all you need.
That's a good point.
Anyway, also, it's all I've got time for. You know, I can't be working on these things. Look, Julia, thank you so much for sharing some of your cards today. I say the same thing. I never know where the postcards will send us. And they sent us in some very interesting places today. Another quick reminder for listeners at home, images of the cards that prompted these stories will all be on the website, so you can have a look, postcardfromthepast.co.uk. Now, before we let Julia out into the slightly drizzly Fitzrovia streets, it is our practice to end the show with one of these fragile things. I'm passing across to Julia right now an item. It's a bit like 20
I don't
questions.
Know quite what it is. It's like a large square-shaped card of a shape I've never seen with some kind of circular thing embossed on it, a hole in the middle.
Well, what's the picture?
A picture of two yachts and with a couple of charming young people on.
Well, it's a musical postcard.
Is it?
It is. Now, young Tom from Wardour Studios, who I can see through the glass, has made a digital recording of this card so we can hear what it sounds like. Hopefully. With any luck? Ah. Here we go. This is a pick-me-up. What does it say? So this one, the song is called Canastos. And the picture is of a lake in the Alps. Well, that makes sense.
That's wonderful.
It's not bad quality. I could imagine dancing to this in a nightclub in the Alps. The end of a long day's sailing.
Indeed, yes. That's a wonderful existence, yes.
So there you
what have I been doing with my life?
A musical postcard. Well, as the beautiful young people and the yachts continue spinning at exactly 45 RPM, that's it for this time on Podcasts from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first class guest for sharing the postcards from her and the archives past, Julia Gillan. Thank you, Julia.
Thank you very much, Tom. It's been a delight.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me, at Past Postcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardourstudios.co.uk.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.